Trident.
Let's talk about the feud.
Let's meet the budget family.
Name an animal whose sex you're never quite sure of.
A pig? I don't pig.
What is going on?
Game shows, folks.
Let's start here. Are we still the hungry dads, Rod?
I'm hungry. First of all, right now, I'm very hungry. I am a dad. So I'm a hungry dad. I am very passionate about game shows.
Okay, so maybe we should be the passionate dads.
The hungry, passionate game show dads podcast.
The hungry and passionate dads. We might get a different clientele.
A little dirty. No, I mean, if you listen to our most recent episode, it was about The Price is Right, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and I think our listeners did too. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback on it. I'm not going to go over this every time, but we've talked a lot about food and snacking. Listen to our first 100 episodes. You'll get plenty of that. I think we're turning to game shows.
Till we change our mind again.
And I'm sure we will organically have food conversation. Because it dominates our lives still.
And I guess we might end up we still have ideas about food, so we might still do some food content. I will say this, we're on a game show jag, no doubt about it. And I think this is going to be quite a jag.
Family Feud. I'm just going to say it, Family Feud. There's been a lot of game shows out there, old school, new school. The greatest game show theme song of all time, old school Family Feud. Let's just listen to it for a second here.
So best of all time is a bold assertion.
It's bold.
Look, after hearing it, I've got to say that was amazing. But we need to use that as the barometer and take every episode going forward and let's compare and let's see if we can declare the best game show intro of all time. Of all time, of all eras.
Yes.
As well.
Our first 30 seconds of every episode moving forward is just analyzing the theme song. Is it better than Family Feud?
Yes,
I'm going to say no, but...
I'm ready to see a challenger to it. I mean, I can think of a few. Look, let's save it for next time.
The budget family. Yeah.
I mean, we might have to come up with some factors, Rod, because I don't know, maybe I'm going to get too academic on this, but I think there's something to how well it fits the show. Maybe our podcast should focus on songs now that I think about it, because I think I could right now very quickly come up with a 10-factor scale to assess any game show. Maybe I can't get to 10, but basically there's the catchiness, there's the appropriateness for the show, there's the long-lasting nature of it, how iconic.
How does it translate? Yeah.
How does it translate through time? I mean, I think we could
First of all, along with the theme song, you have the, like, at least in old school, you have the still portrait. They, like, reveal the, it's, like, supposed to be a painting, I think, and they're all standing still. And they're usually very awkward looking. And then they, like, spring to life.
There's, like, a screen that reveals a family kind of sitting in, like, a portrait style.
Like it would say budget very large on the screen, and it would go to the side, and, like, all five of them are, like, posed. And then at some point, they spring to life. It's pretty cool, I gotta admit.
And then the thing I said I wanted to do, if I may start, is I said maybe my shtick is going to be, as I did with The Price is Right, I'm going to watch these shows with my kids. I think that's something I kind of wanted to get some impressions on. So if you listen back to The Price is Right episode, you'll know that my two kids were very enamored with The Price is Right. And so when I said, let's watch another game show, it's called The Family Feud, they were pretty excited. They were pretty into it.
May I take a guess? Like, you and I have not discussed the kids' reactions, but I'm just going to guess, like, they were not as big of a fan as The Family Feud, as Price is Right, because I think it's a little more adult.
Well, that's part of it. So I think they were interested. We were watching it, and Mrs. Gallen was kind of in the other room listening, and there's definitely more innuendo
and such
in The Family Feud than I remembered. I mean, it was not wildly inappropriate.
The more recent feuds has gotten, it's gotten a little racy.
I watched a Ray Combs episode, which is older, and look, again, none of it was wildly inappropriate, but there's innuendo, and then there's just some of the answers to questions are sex or sexy or something like that. And one of the answers to one of the questions was stripper. Mrs. Gallen was like, seriously, Hugh? And she was right. Like, not that it was crazy, but it wasn't exactly for kids. So we kind of petered out of it, and they didn't seem to mind. They were interested, but for different reasons, I ended up just kind of canceling that part of the show and moved on to something else. So that was my first kind of thing, was there was definitely a little more innuendo and sex talk than in The Price is Right. So we'll save that for, you know, when the kids are older.
Yeah, I took more of a historical perspective because it's been on, people don't realize, but almost as long as The Price is Right. You've had quite a few hosts, but I think the three main hosts that people remember are Richard Dawson, of course, Ray Combs, and most recently, of course, Steve Harvey.
Yeah, let's just not forget really quick, Louis Anderson for a stint.
Yes,
and
the
guy
from
Al
Home
Improvement. Al, who has a name, I'm sure, and he did a fine job.
Who, honestly, as a podcasting expert, I didn't even realize he hosted, because that was kind of the time when I wasn't watching it at all. And then when I started doing research, I was like, what? But there's actually a lot of kind of behind the scenes, very interesting history about Family Feud. First of all, just some general thoughts about the show and the rules. Like, I watched it as a kid growing up, but I watched back to do some research. It's a half hour show. The first 7 minutes is just like talking to the families and like meeting the families and like introduce your family. I think in this day and age, that wouldn't fly. Like,
well, on the Steve Harvey version, it is not like that.
Right.
They pretty much get to the feud.
Yeah. Richard Dawson and even some Ray Combs, like, especially Richard Dawson, though, was 7 or 8 minutes of, okay, who are you? Tell us about your family.
Combs,
this is,
too.
Yeah. This is my cousin, Tim, and he is a doctor, and kissing Richard Dawson. Kissing. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of the big thing. I figured it would, like, be a controversy, but I went on YouTube and, like, watched some old episodes and look at the comments, and all the top comments are like, oh, it was just innocent, like, don't get it worked up, or that would never fly these days. And I don't want to make the whole episode about Richard Dawson's. If you don't know, Richard Dawson kissed all the ladies on the cheek, like every single lady. And there's a whole faction of dirty old man versus we're too hypersensitive this day and age. And I fall somewhere in between probably, but you have to acknowledge that's a big part of the show.
I don't want to presume any of Richard Dawson's preferences, but if I remember correctly, he kissed the old ladies on the cheek.
Every single female.
He kissed the young ladies on the cheek. I mean, I do not recall him reserving it only for the pretty ones or the young ones, right?
No. That's a fair assessment. It was every single female.
I mean, I guess where I started to draw the line is you could say, well, they all seem to be willing and giving their permission. But on the other hand, in that day and age and national television, I suppose.
And they must prep them. Like, they must say, Richard's going to kiss your cheek. Like, are you okay with that? And if you're not, like, something happens. I don't know. You don't go on the show.
In the early stages of the show, the people on it may not have seen it, but fairly quickly, I would think the folks who were on it had a sense of what was coming. But I wonder if there's any record of any lady just politely refusing. I suppose not.
I would be some interesting research. And again, similar to The Price is Right, I would love to have the time to go back and do an analytical deep dive into the Family Feud. If you could just rewatch all the episodes and see, like, if there's ever an awkward moment where a young lady, like, he doesn't kiss her cheek or she politely declines. I'm guessing that doesn't happen.
If you'll back us on Kickstarter, we will do the
Again,
full review
yes.
of the entire catalog of Family Feud
begging,
to see if there's any non-kissing
begging.
Moments.
Yeah.
We will do a full algorithm on the spinning of the Price is Right wheel. There's a lot of unanswered questions out there, and we're ready to take them on. We just need to quit our jobs.
From a rules standpoint, I guess with every game show, and we'll probably do this as we go along the line, you can kind of criticize an aspect of it. With The Price is Right, I think mine would be bidding $1 higher on Contestants Row. With Family Feud, the first round is like just regular point values. The second round is double. The third round is triple. Basically, if you win the third round, you're going to win. Like,
yep.
Nothing
yeah,
matters
yeah,
except
yeah.
the third
All
round.
The stakes.
Which is kind of the charm of it in a way, because it's a very slow build. There's no like building an insurmountable lead in the Family Feud. Because it's going to come down to the end, and whoever wins the third round is going to win.
I mean, there aren't even a lot of opportunities for strategy. I think there's only a few.
Right.
It's number one, you know, the passer, really just the passer play. It seems to be the only choice you get to make in the whole show, right?
Which is another point. No, have you ever seen anybody pass?
No, I don't think anyone.
I think maybe twice, thinking back in like my whole history. Nobody passes because it's kind of like
you probably can't.
You're giving
do it.
Up control.
I mean, maybe if you're thinking hard about it, and this is where it kind of is an extension of that strategy. Let me ask you this, Rob Budget: if you were, you know, up to the buzzer, and look, let's just—I would hope that anyone listening has a sense of the dynamics of the show. But just to be clear, after they do an introduction of the family, one member of the family come up to a podium, and there's a buzzer on each side of the podium,
like a toss-up,
and the toss-up, and the host says. 100 people surveyed. What is a food that is served at Thanksgiving dinner or something like that? It's a
turkey.
And then they both buzz in, and the first buzzer will say stuffing. And, you know, and then they will, if it's the number one answer, they get to pass or play. If it's not the number one answer, the other one gets to try, and they say turkey, and then that's the number one answer. And then that family will get to pass or play. The thing I want to ask you about is, you know, every time they say 100 people surveyed, top four answers on the board or top eight answers on the board. Rod Budget, let's say you go up there to the buzzer, to the podium for the toss-up. Would you rather see top four answers on the board, top eight answers on the board? Like, is what's better, more answers or less answers?
That's a good question, and I think I've noticed that there are more answers earlier in the show. So I think for time purposes, they're trying to condense the show. So when it gets to triple points, there's only four answers up there. I would rather see eight answers up there. Because I think whether there's eight or whether there's four, those bottom couple of answers or one answer are just random people who are giving like pretty dumb responses.
Right.
So if you have eight, like you can probably get most of them. And even if you don't get all of them and it goes to the other team to steal, it's going to be pretty hard to come up
that
with.
That last one might be really difficult.
Yeah.
Because obviously the reason it works is because on one hand, a smaller number is fewer you have to get to clear the board. But the fewer there are, the smaller the universe within which you can get right answers.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it probably depends on the question, but all else equal, I suppose a top eight just means you and your family are in a long haul and you have three strikes either way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so I do think the market fixes itself with those, but it's, so it's, I don't even know if you can call it a strategy on that, but I suppose I'd rather have. Oy, I don't know. See, I think
it's tough.
I might rather have four.
Yeah, I think with four, you're more likely to, like, completely, like, leave out the top answer somehow.
Yeah. I mean, you certainly don't have as much room to explore little brainstorms and stuff. But look, it's a three-strike rule either way you slice it. And I'd like to think that, well, let's make it real world. If my family goes up there, I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's tough.
I think I might be the only one I have any.
It's stressful.
In, that's
not quite as stressful as Price is Right, but it's still stressful.
Oh, I'll get to this a little more later. But it's also stressful. It has to be stressful when a family member is just given a terrible answer.
Yeah.
Just a terrible answer. And you notice there's this pregnant pause, and then they clap.
Yep.
All right, let's see.
Okay.
And there's no chance that it's the answer.
Which I think is, like, at the core of the, like, humor of Family Feud.
Yeah, there's clapping between every answer,
yep.
I mean, no matter what. And it's very...
So, yeah, name a way to get from point A to point B, and they say hopscotch. People are going to clap. Good answer.
I don't want to jump ahead too quick, but as I was talking about strategy, I can't seem to figure out a single ounce of strategy that one can use in the final round. And real quick, maybe I explain the first round. You want to explain the final round for folks? Make sure they're up to speed.
The final round, you select two of the five family members to come up, and they go consecutively. So one will come up, and the other one can't hear the answers, and the other one comes up. And it's kind of like the toss-up round, but that's all you do in the final round. So you'll get five questions. So very rapid fire. I think the first contestant gets 15 seconds to answer the five questions. Second gets 20 seconds because if they repeat an answer that the first one gave, they'll hear this sound. Meh, meh, try again. And they get to try again.
You're really trying to get the best two answers for that. And they've done the math where presumably the best two or maybe three answers in enough categories will get you to 200 points.
The Price is Right, I was hard on the Showcase Showdown, but I think the bonus round in Family Feud is more compelling than the game show itself, mainly because I think it's more rapid and it's more like instantly gratifying. And the second person you're like stressed out for. I find the bonus round pretty intriguing.
I think it's the best part of the show. You know, like
It is. And it's hard to win, I've noticed. I mean, I didn't do a lot of back research watching recent episodes, but I remember growing up, like, people didn't win the bonus round that often, and it was kind of a big deal.
It's tough to do, and I think they actually do a surprisingly good job of structuring it in a couple different ways. I mean, most of the time, people are kind kind of within shot of getting it, and when they don't, it's close. Right. I've never seen anyone blow it out really, really huge. So I think it's structured pretty well. The other piece that I want to give some credit to, and I'll give credit to all the hosts I've ever seen because I don't think this has ever been a factor, but it's a timed thing where most of the time is being spent by the host reading the questions. You know, I mean, maybe they do retakes, but I can't imagine they do. Like, that host has to do it right. They got to do it right the first time. They got to read quickly.
On point.
And if that host isn't effective, that whole round is ruined. I actually wrote, I watched two episodes, and I wrote down the survey questions for some of them, and I noted the top two answers on the board for each one. Would you be interested in trying a challenge?
They're heavy food base. We can do a callback.
There might be something food in here. Actually, before I do that, Rod, just a couple more broad observations. We talked about the hosts. Whereas back in the Richard Dawson and the Combs eras, you're right, a lot of time was spent chatting, introducing, a very maybe folksy kind of way. I noticed Combs got a little annoyed with people sometimes. I don't know if Dawson did, but Combs was, I mean, he had that edge, maybe that Bob Barker style edge to him, where it was kind of like, you know, he was charming, but he also was kind of like, he didn't care about these people. Whereas when I watch Steve Harvey, who's the current host, I think he does a very fine job. He doesn't spend that time doing so much of like the chit chat, the folksy chit chat. He'll go into a bit. You know, he's a stand up comedian, so he will go into basically what's a comedy bit. You know, and I think even sometimes the categories are kind of there to feed what is something they know Steve's going to joke about. And you know, I think we can't help but compare it to what we talked about last week with The Price is Right. You know, we complimented Drew Carey heavily on the fact that he's a comedian, but he stayed out of the way of
it. It's the opposite with Steve Harvey.
It's the opposite with Steve Harvey, and I don't blame
Steve
Harvey.
I think that's good for the Family Feud.
Exactly. For the Family Feud, if you go back to the history of it, the game's okay, but it needs
it's
a personality.
About comedy.
It needs a personality to be interesting, because if you just play the game perfectly straight, it's not a great game. It's not a great game. And with that, let's play the game perfectly straight with me as the host.
There will be no comedy here.
So in no particular
order. Pressure. No pressure, Rod.
All right. So and the reason I want to share these is because I want to afterwards maybe analyze like some of the questions I think are good questions and some of them maybe aren't as good. So Rod Budget, name something that men talk about endlessly. 100 women were surveyed.
Sex.
Sex was number 2. Sports was number 1.
All right.
Name an animal whose sex you're never quite sure of.
Cat.
I think that was number 3 or 4 on the board.
Fish?
Fish was number 3. Surprisingly and stupidly, now this is not the contestants,
yeah,
but this is
this
the
is
survey.
Where this is a good point, because there's some where I'm like, why is that the number 1 answer?
This is just name animals. The number 1, and this is terrible, this is not the contestant, this is the survey's fault. The number 1 answer is bird. Now, if there's any animal where you can tell the difference, it's birds, because they got colors and stuff. Like, that is completely, anyone with kind of some knowledge and education on birds actually would say, no, that's terrible. Birds are like,
and animal? How often do you wonder about the sex of a bird?
Exactly.
Anyway.
I don't think this is a great question, but this is one where after a family accepting to play, them losing and it bouncing to the other family still couldn't clear the board either. So I think that's the sign of a bad question. And it's the kind of thing where if you're really paying attention to strategy, I think you'd pass. You know, maybe pass on that one, right? Or maybe not.
Pass.
Maybe you play, because even if you fail, you think the other team's going to fail. I don't know. It's, you know. Moving on. Name the title of a nursery rhyme with a girl's name.
Jack and Jill.
Jack and Jill was number 2. Mary Had a Little Lamb, number 1.
That's fair, because Mary Had a Little Lamb, it's only a female.
100 people surveyed. Top 2 answers is what I'm looking for. Name a musical instrument that you do not blow.
Guitar.
Guitar was number 2. Number 1,
drum.
Piano. Drum was on the board. Definitely on the
board. See, that one's open to... They're trying to make sex jokes there.
I think so. And Combs made some kind of joke. It wasn't a sex joke. He's like, oh, you know, I played violin in high school. Maybe I wasn't good because I was always blowing into the thing. And, you know, that was his joke.
That's kind of funny, actually.
All right. Now, those were all from the Combs era. Let's hear a few from the Steve Harvey era.
So I don't think I've gotten any number 1s, but I've gotten several number 2s. All right.
100 people surveyed. Top 2 answers what I'm looking for. Name one good thing about being bald.
Don't have to comb your hair.
I think that was number three.
Wash your hair.
No shampoo was number one. Yeah. Not spending money on shampoo. No haircuts was number two. Number four was being sexy. And and Steve, who's bald, went into a whole sexy talk and jive and everything. It was very cool. But it was the first moment where watching with my kids, I was like, all right. I mean, again, it wasn't inappropriate, but it was like, this is not resonating with a six-year-old.
It's a little out there.
next on the board, next question, 100 people surveyed. Something a farmer with bad eyesight may try to milk.
God. All right, let me try to answer first of all. A pig? A pig?
So it turned into, it was basically name a farm animal.
Right. I'm trying to think of something that looks like a cow.
So number one appropriately was a bull, which kind of makes sense. Right. It was a bull. Cow was actually on the board. Just cow. Number two was a horse.
It's bad eyesight, but they can still kind
of see. And if you listen to the form of a question, you might, let me just repeat it with some emphasis, something a farmer with bad eyesight may try to milk. So people focused on animals, but there was one answer on the board that was not an animal. It's a jokey answer. His wife was one of the ones on the board.
It crossed my mind.
And so that got a big laugh, and of course, you know, Steve went on that, and again I kind of thought about doing earmuffs.
So here's the thing,
kid.
I bet they ask like way too many questions, these surveys, and they pick out ones that have like funny answers.
Right. Well, that's the other thing is I'm about to be critical of some of these questions, especially I think the last one I asked.
Milking,
but then again, they've been asking just so many questions. Like
they've run out of questions.
The people, how do you think you get the job at thinking of the survey questions?
That I want that job.
Is a job I want to look into getting. Next question: a job a woman has where men are always flirting with them.
I'm gonna get in trouble.
The husband who answered, he got a look from his wife.
I'm sure. See, again, this is the setup.
Number one and two answers.
Police woman.
Wow, that one wasn't even mentioned. The worst, worst answer that was given was teacher, which I think
that's terrible. Doesn't make sense.
Number one was a waitress. Number two was bartender. Number three was stripper. This was where was where Mrs. Gallen in the episode said, "Come on, Hugh, let's turn it off." And she was right. She was right.
Yeah, it's inappropriate.
Yeah, it's not necessary. So, and then that's where I throughout this process, I'm coming to the realization: Family Feud's a little more risque than I remembered. I didn't realize that. I had forgotten it. All right, last question: something children wear out, and I'm reading exactly the way it was presented.
A dress.
Right. So let me just tell you how this went rolled out.
I don't even know what that means.
This was at the buzzer. So someone said coat. And number one on the answer board flipped around, shoes, clothes. So then there's four more answers to give.
That weren't clothes. Yeah, that's a terrible question.
So
wear out a necklace.
Okay, so you're doing what
jewelry.
The first family did, quite reasonably, was trying to figure out this woman's like, they got three strikes they got to work through. And the woman finds, like, food. Like, I guess my kids have food on their clothes when they go out. They're like big X. The other family figured out that what the question meant was something that they wear out. They wear through it. They use it up. Like, clothes.
What a terribly worded
toys
question.
And their parents.
Right.
Like, that was the question. And
you would think they would, like, focus group these things.
And so that one, I mean, a family lost in the third round on that question.
I would sue.
I mean, I think, as a viewer, maybe not under stress, I figured it out pretty quickly, but I kept screaming at the TV, like, this is a bad question. This is not fair.
Hugh Gallen was yelling at the TV.
I got very animated. When the woman said food for the answer, like the crowd kind of laughed, or there was kind of like Steve made a reaction like, all right, but
like,
the woman was not crazy. Like the way the question was asked, she was like, so at any rate, that's an example, I think, of a really bad question, kind of unfair. And for
terrible.
The third round, they worked through their three X's there trying to come up with
the lawsuit on their hands.
That concludes our version of the feud here, Rod. I think you did okay.
I don't think you hit number one, really. Average at best.
Hungry Dads. Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
Sounded like something just hit my house. All right.
Hugh Gallen's in the midst of a blizzard up. It's the 4-Easter. Not to give up too much away. Do you need to go check
It's a plow. Plow's going by. Okay. All right.
The snowplow's going back.
It's like going into my house. All right.
Richard Dawson.
Let's talk about the feud. Let's talk about the feud.